Alex, welcome to the Commerce Talks podcast. Today we are talking about a hobby I picked up over the summer and I got particularly interested in how it works. We are talking about e-foiling, a trend many people have seen on Instagram and Facebook. I tried it out. I did a lot of research in this area and I found you. You started a brand in that area, but before I tell anything wrong, please introduce yourself to the audience and tell us what Seafly actually is.
Hi, Alex. It's a pleasure to be part of this podcast. Thank you for inviting me. And thank you for the introduction. As you've said, I am leading one of the more popular e-foil brands on the market. It's called Seafly. We come from Bulgaria and we've been developing this project already for 4.5 years. We are super keen in this sport and we want to bring it to as many people as possible, make it as accessible as possible. And that's our mission.
Okay, then let me take you on the journey how I came to a certain brand and to a board. So when I started like researching it and I saw the videos from Mark Zuckerberg and some others like from the German founders industries online, I thought, okay, that looks super nice. Like, and I want to try it out. And when I started researching, I found a brand which is particularly successful as a brand in Germany, which is Audi. They are somehow lending its brand to an e-foil partner. So you're getting a lot of like Audi offers. And when I dig deeper, I learned that, okay, there's nothing really available below 6,000 euros or 7,000 euros if you like buy it new. And it's easy to get to like 15,000-16,000 euros, which made me wonder, because it kind of limits kind of the reach of these kind of toys, because there's very few people that are willing to spend money they could also buy a boat for or a skidoo or whatever. And then, because my expectation would have been, okay, there's, I don't know, a board, some foil, a motor, and a remote that cannot be too expensive. But then I learned it is expensive. It's kind of a very niche sport with high tech technology. And then I found somebody like close by who was willing to lend me his board so I could learn it for a couple of hours, had some fun with my son. And I would have expected that there's like 2, 3, 4 like global brands widely distributed, but that does not seem to be true. It's like many, many, many brands in this market. Some brands actually went out of the market already. Some brands are trying to sell into new channels with Decathlon, for example. And then I found your brand, which is also offered at surf camps close by. So I'm living in Kiel, close to the sea. And I think within like 100 kilometers, like there's like 2 or 3 spots where they're offering Seafly boards. And then I reached out to you just to learn what is making it so expensive, number one. And how is distribution actually working? Because obviously nobody's willing to buy such a product without touching it or trying it out, which kind of limits the growth of this kind of stuff. So can you please take us on your own founder's journey? Because like 4 years ago, you said, or 4.5 years ago, you just started. So how did you come up with this idea? How was the market 4.5 years? Where are we today with this industry?
All right. These are a lot of questions, but let's start with them one by one. First of all, I want to explain a little bit about structure of an e-foil, because from outside, it looks like a pretty simple device, a board, a surfboard that you can find nowadays everywhere, including in Decathlon for very little money. Then a hydrofoil, which is essentially 2 wings most of the time, 1 front wing, which generates the lift that lifts you up and lets you ride above the water. Then you have a smaller stabilizer, a smaller wing in the back that is used to make the balance of the foil easier for people. And then you have a propulsion system, which is basically a motor coupled with a battery and a controller so that you can control the speed, the RPM. And while this seems relatively straightforward and easy, it is actually a really complex task to make all these electronics to work in water, and actually salty water, which is the worst thing, the biggest enemy to electronics. And while it seems simple, there are actually 4 or 5 different electronic modules, controllers in every foil, no matter the brand. And then you add the motor or the battery cells, which are also quite expensive. And most of the time, boards and wings are made of carbon as well, which is one of the most expensive materials on Earth nowadays. This is what drives costs really high and therefore the retail price of these products. And yeah, this is the reason why they are expensive. Actually, you've tried e-foils about 6 years after they've been built for the first time, and prices have been reduced heavily. Initially, the starting price of an e-foil was around 20,000 euro. Then after a few years, it fell to 15. And with time, we've managed to reach lower prices in 5 to 6, 7,000 euro range, which is on the way to getting accessible for more people. But it is still, as you said, a price for which you could almost buy a boat or a small inexpensive car. So yeah, we still have a long way to go until we make it as mass market as, for example, electric bikes. And that's certainly one of our key objectives in our brand. We want to make e-foils accessible, both in the way they are ridden, how easy it is to learn, what technical background you require to learn e-foiling. And I will say now, you don't need any surfing or any other sports background to learn quickly. And we also want to make it very accessible in terms of pricing. And we want to reach the level of electric bikes nowadays, because they share the same path. Initially, they were quite expensive and very few could afford them and were willing to invest in such a toy or such piece of sports goods. But with time, volume especially, we hope to manage to lower the price as much as possible and make the sport widely accessible and available. And to tell you about our journey as a company, everything started in the end of 2019 when I met with my partner and investor in this project. At that time, I was campaigning for the Olympic Games in kite foiling. That's a new discipline that took part in the games for the first time this summer in the Summer Olympics in France. I met with my partner and we were talking about my sport and foiling sports in general. And with him coming from the consumer electronics business, he has one of the most successful companies in this industry in Bulgaria. We discussed the idea of building an e-foil ourselves. And for me, that was a very exciting opportunity because it would match my biggest passion. So I've been doing professionally for more than 10 years with technology, which is also something I love. I graduated in physics, so this project kind of combined my education, my passion, my favorite sport. So yeah, we embarked on this journey 2019 and started with the R&D. It turned out to be a much harder process than we expected, both of us. There are a lot of challenges in building such a complex system, and especially when it operates in water and in salty water under UV light. The R&D took about 2.5 years. Our initial plan was 1 year, but yeah, we had to go through a numerous prototypes to nail everything.
But how does, maybe let's stick with R&D like for just for a second, because when I started my researching and seeing, okay, there's like an electric motor involved, there's a battery involved, controllers involved, that's actually an area where Chinese developers are like leading globally. So it's like, so my expectation would have been that all these kind of parts are coming from China. So when you're like starting developing such an e-foil, I believe creating like a carbon wing, that is definitely something you can do in Europe or in Bulgaria. But anyway, you are dependent on suppliers from China for this stuff. So how did it start eventually? So board and wing and maybe even mast, I believe you can do your own, because the mast is sometimes built off from aluminium, right? But yeah, all the other stuff, like all the different, that must come from China, or is that any European or Bulgarian supplier in there?
So you are right. The Chinese have been doing a lot of controllers for the past 10 years, not for e-foils, but for other electric toys, for bikes, for electric skateboards. This is actually another industry from which e-foiling borrowed a lot of ideas initially. And actually e-foils, they began as let's say, do-it-yourself project, I would say, in Europe. The first documented case is from a Swedish technical institute as part of a environmentally good project in a research group that wanted to build a safe and green and efficient electric vehicle. So they did the first prototype of an e-foil. It didn't look exactly like the e-foils that we see today, but it was powered by an electric motor and flying on wings. And then there was a community of do-it-yourself builders that combined controllers and parts from basically the electric skateboard industry. And of course, you have to have some knowledge and engineering skills to adapt everything for an e-foil, but that's how the first prototypes emerged. And those parts were available in China, but they are not perfectly suitable for an electric hydrofoil that runs in water conditions. And most of the parts are not optimized to work with each other. So you end up buying different controllers from different manufacturers, and you have to make them work together. And while it is possible, it definitely is not optimized. So we as well started our R&D journey by getting our hands on such controllers from different manufacturers. We bought different wings from the standard kite and wing foiling industry. We built our boards and we started assembling and testing and changing a lot of things, trying to find out how the system works and what are the key points for a good e-foil. And then in the next step, we started building our own parts. And that includes both actual hydrofoil and board, the design of the board, the wings, the fuselage, the mast, everything mechanical, so to say. But on the other hand, we've started designing our own controllers as well, because yeah, I'm fortunate that my partner has huge background in electronics, and I had access to good electronic engineers, software developers, and mechanical engineers as well. So we started designing the system as a whole, having in mind that every controller has to work with every other controller. For example, the BMS in our battery has to work well with the ESC controller, which controls the currents in the motor, and then the whole thing has to communicate with the central computer of the board, which is controlled by the remote controller. And when you have everything in mind from the beginning, you're able to create a much more optimized system with proprietary software that we've written ourselves. And I would compare it, for example, to the way Apple and Android works. Apple designs its hardware and its software, and it's able to really take the full potential of both, while Android, for example, has to work on hundreds of different models from different manufacturers and on different hardware, different CPUs, etc. And that makes it much harder to optimize it very well.
Okay, and I believe, just for me to understand, so there's no like big factory you can go in China like and pick parts and put whatever you want to put together. You're designing a system. You're creating some specs. Then you find factories that are like building based on those specs, motor parts, battery parts for you. So what you have in your board is yours. Might be produced in China, but like software is yours, design is yours, specs are yours. Is this correct?
Actually, for most parts in the electronic system, even the parts are not produced in China. Well, the individual components, for example, the CPU of the electronic printed circuit board, they are produced in China, as well as battery cells. That's the way the industry works. But the actual circuit board assembly takes place in Bulgaria. And the design, the construction is ours. We control the assembly. We do the testing. We flash the software, the firmware onto the electronic modules. So it's not that we are ordering custom electronic modules from a big factory in China. We are actually designing, constructing, and ordering all the components for our modules, and then we assemble them in Bulgaria. And this is great because this way we have full control of the quality, and we can test every module in several steps during the production process. And that's something that you can't really rely on if you work with a company.
Okay, got it. Because I was wondering when I started researching, obviously I always used like Alibaba just to get some like factory prices, and you can buy e-foils from Alibaba, and there's even videos on YouTube from people like buying the cheapest e-foil possible. It somehow works, right? Though there must be some like Chinese engineers that are also like putting e-foils on top. But you're saying, okay, this is maybe a copycat of what was in the market like 3 or 4 years ago. And this is like then redone in China, but this has nothing to do with the boards you're selling today, or Lyft, one other big company selling today, or Flyte is selling today. That's more like proprietary components.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend to anyone buying those super cheap Chinese foils from Alibaba and AliExpress. First of all, because there is a huge safety hazard, especially with the battery, but with other controllers as well.
I saw this. They are building components in there that I would not even put in my RC car. It's like, it's crazy.
Yeah, the connectors they use, the waterproof casings, most of the time they don't have any standards for the battery, any safety certificates. And that's one thing. From what I've seen, most of the time, these cheap foils, they work for a few rides and then something breaks or burns and you end up wasting your money and you have no way to repair it. And additionally, while they seem similar on pictures, if you look at the board or if you look at the wings, because of course they copy the designs of the leading brands, there are key parts of the design of every board and every wing to make it fly and work in the desired way. And to have good performance, you need to have a really good shape of the wings and the board. These are the most important aspects. The wings basically are responsible for all the flying performance that you get on your e-foil, the way the e-foil turns, how stable it is, how much speed you need to take off, and how efficient it is. This all depends on the wings. And on the other hand, the board, depending on the shape of the board, you can either have a really nice and balanced, comfortable stance on it. You can ride with ease. And when you touch down, when you hit waves, or when you touch the edge of the board while you turn, if you have a really good board, it would not leave you to fall in the water. You will keep your perfect control of the e-foil and you'll be able to ride and enjoy. And if you have a bad board, basically, every time you make a mistake and it touches the water, it will catapult you and you will crash. So these are things that you can't easily see on pictures, but this is where the R&D process is making a difference.
I got it. So it's like, don't buy it. So I understood actually from like reading the reviews in YouTube and looking at the electronic specs, and you're seeing today some houses are burning because of like bad batteries from Chinese e-bikes. So I think like people are getting more sensitive about it. But let's go back like to your brand again. So I understand like production process like complicated. You're like in now the second, third generations of your board, but still it seems to be like a niche market. So we've talked about before this podcast about how big the market might be. So what is your assumption on how many e-foil boards are sold like globally? Because this is kind of determine what kind of retail strategy is possible. If 1 million board is sold like globally on a yearly basis, then other retail strategy might kick in then if there's only like 100 or 200 boards sold. And still, even here close to the waterside in Kiel, which is like top spot like for water sports, especially like surfing and kite foiling, all the stuff, most of the days you won't see an e-foil. So maybe like, I don't know, couple of times in the summer. So it seems to be a rare sport still, or rare toy.
Well, you're right. E-foils are still a very niche sport and product and industry. And there are a few factors that are responsible for this. First of all, the sport is relatively new. It's less than 5-6 years since it became commercially available. Mm-hmm. And people still don't know about it. Like if you go e-foiling outside in the sea, for example, in Bulgaria, you will get a big crowd of people asking what it is, how it works, how is it levitating magically above the water. And this means that the general level of of knowledge about eFOS is still very low. So this is a limiting factor for the growth of the market and something that all the brands are pushing to improve, to educate people and to explain as well that it is very, very easy to start e-foiling and to learn it. A lot of people are scared about the difficulty when they see how you balance on a board standing on a piece of aluminium because they don't even see what's underwater. And I am sure this is a big limiting factor for a lot of people that have, let's say, the funds to get one and it seems interesting to them, but they don't believe that they could learn it. And this is a common misconception. And actually, foils are the easiest of all foiling sports. You can't learn kitesurfing, wing foiling, windsurfer, or anything, surfing on waves. You can't learn faster than an e-foil. It just takes about an hour. Yeah. And this is something that we as e-foil builders have to spread to the community. And in my opinion, this is what will push the sport to new heights.
But how big is the market then? So how many boards? What's your assumption on how many boards are sold globally?
At the moment, I would assume it's around 7,000 boards globally per year. Although these are assumptions. I mean, no one openly shares their numbers, but it's about there. US and Europe are the main continents in this industry. And then you have some sales in Asia and all the islands, South America, but not that much. And currently, this is the size of the industry. Mm. And we believe that it could reach several tens of thousands of units sold globally once the sport becomes more accessible and obviously more affordable.
So like let's assume we have like 7,000 boards with like an average price point of 7,000. That's the selling price of the makers, because you have like many more expensive boards. Then we are in an industry somewhere between like 40 million to 100 million, like upper level, more or less, which is globally, which is definitely niche, because some of the manufacturers I saw like bragging numbers which were like in the thousands in Europe alone, which I couldn't believe, because you don't see them that often, and you don't have like and you can definitely check it with the second hand market. So if there's like so many boards in the market, then you would see them on like eBay or so, because like people are selling them after a season, and it's like still a rare thing. You find a couple of like advertisements for that, but not so many. So it's like it's a small market. Then let me ask you the question: if the market is that small, so how do you look at it from a business case perspective? Because you're saying you had to invest 2.5 years in R&D. Let's say R&D, building a board, like paying salaries, $500,000, $1 million, like 2.5 years. Now, if you have like an honest view on the market, saying you have to go into the market from a certain region, you cannot start like globally because you have to build like kind of a network. There's a couple of hundred boards you could sell in the first couple of years. So we are talking single-digit millions in revenue, which is kind of possible for this kind of business if you're not putting hundreds of millions in advertising money in there. And it didn't work for Audi, so why should it work for you, right? So it's like, it's not that Audi e-foils are everywhere. Also, they advertised it on like every boat show. So it's still kind of a market that needs to develop. So how do you look at it from a founder's perspective? And it's kind of I guess you're a venture capital financier or so. So can you talk us through that a bit?
Well, you're right.
One more remark. Why I'm asking you. So I'm still, after like having this experience of an e-foil, I'm still interested in like next year, like buying one, but I only want to buy one if there's like a stable journey of a brand. And because there's so much like brand volatility in the market, I'm not sure who will be there like in 5 or 10 years. That's why I want to understand like your rationale in this industry.
Yeah, well, 10 years is a very long period for this scale of companies that we are at the moment. But you're certainly right. The investment to build an e-foil with all the engineering power that you need, all the expenses for prototyping and iterating the system until it reaches a production level is huge. And of course, this is not planned to be won back in the first year of sales. We are having a long-term strategy and a long-term partnership with my partner and investor. And we believe in the long-term potential of this market. So currently we are in the single thousands of units sold digits ourselves as a brand and globally as a, as an industry. But we believe that we're going to reach several tens of thousands a year. And, and this is where the business starts to be attractive from the perspective of numbers. So right now, I won't say that it's hugely successful gold mine, let's say. While it covers the bills, yeah, you need to sell a lot more to make it into a very profitable business. But we strongly believe in the future of e-foils in this industry and generally in the electrification of water sports and water vehicles. So for us, this project is a way to gather a lot of know-how and understand how electric systems work, how hydrofoils work as well, because a lot of water vehicles, boats, catamarans, even bigger ferries and ships are getting on foils. They start flying, they reduce their drag and increase efficiency amazingly much.
What is the efficiency gain? Let's just like for me to understand. So if you're like, if you're not flying, if you're just like, how do you say, not swimming,
gliding on the water.
If you're lying on the water and like driving, like let's say 15 kilometers an hour versus flying 15 kilometers an hour, what is kind of the efficiency gain there? How much less energy is needed in the flying mode?
I would say you save more than 40% of the energy. It depends a lot on the type of wings you have and the type of board you have, because boards for e-foiling are not optimized to run on the water. They are optimized to fly. You could have a more efficient shape of a board in order to use less energy while moving water. But even with our boards, you have a huge efficiency gain of about 40%. And this is a lot, because with the current battery technology, which is still quite heavy, unfortunately, you could get so much more ride time from the same size and weight of a battery. Or conversely, you could get the same ride time with much smaller and lighter battery, which allows you to extract much more performance from your system. So yeah, hydrofoils are definitely here to stay, and a lot of sailing boats, motor boats and yachts are starting to transition to this technology. And yeah, we believe this is the future. So while we spend money to develop and improve our e-foil systems, we are also gaining very valuable know-how that we could transform into other projects later on. And we already have some ideas and side projects that we're working on, different from e-foils.
You want to become like a water sport brand, not maybe just an e-foil brand.
Well, yeah, we want to add some products to our portfolio that fit our market. And yeah, we already have the know-how from the first product range, from the first system. And now it will be easier to just widen our range of products and reach more people.
Okay, then that's okay. I understand the industry. I understand the specs of the board, so how it's built and like what are the challenges of it and how the market might develop in the next couple of years. So, but then let's look at the distribution side, which is kind of the core of the podcast. Obviously, the podcast is focusing more on the e-commerce part. But if I were you, obviously, thinking like from Bulgaria, so how do I reach like the rich people in Miami or Mallorca or whatever, or like the people that are owning yachts? So what is the next like yacht expo where I can present the boards? That seemed for me like very complicated and expensive, because it's as a niche market, it's very hard to find the right people, because you're not aiming for like 1 million customers, and you could like use more like, I don't know, podcast advertisement or TV or whatever, but you really need to reach the people that can afford those boards and that are like in a setup where you can create a retailing or service infrastructure. So, and that was why I was surprised learning about your brand, because I've learned e-foiling on a Weidu board and on an old one. And then I thought, okay, interesting technology. So how do they sell? It seems to be like a very direct to consumer approach with very, very small service network. There's maybe one or two people you can buy those boards in Germany from. So whenever there's like a problem, you have to reach them. And then I saw two or three like surfing schools nearby promoting Seafly boards. Well, I was wondering, how is that possible for such a small new brand from Bulgaria? And yeah, I just wanted to learn how did you do it? How does it work for you? And how you look at it like in the future? Because obviously I can go to your website and put a board in the basket, but most likely that's not the way how people are buying these things, right?
Yeah, you're right. E-foils are still relatively unknown and as well quite expensive for people to just put their credit cards on the website and order them. A lot of them want to first meet with someone on land, talk about the brand, talk about the models, which one would suit them, and in the best case scenario as well, try them and ride them before they make the decision for a purchase. Even very rich people with very little problems in buying 50 of these boards, they still like to first do a test ride. And I guess because the e-foils are getting closer to motorbikes and cars in terms of their price, perhaps people are expecting to have the same purchasing style and customer journey as cars. So most people would like to do a test ride before they opt for a board and before they purchase one. And while we and all the other brands have, of course, online shops in our websites, it is actually the dealer and distribution network that drives sales. And for the moment, this is the most successful channel for selling these e-foils. And we've put a lot of effort into building our network. For the moment, it's stronger in Europe and in the Middle East, but we're also expanding to other continents. And what has been very important for us was the participation at boat shows, because this is a place where you could meet like-minded people and businesses, and you can make partnerships with companies that work with people from our target group, from our potential clients. And of course, you meet the end consumers as well. They're able to see and touch your board, talk with you, and learn more about the technology and how everything works. And yeah, I would say this is one of the important ways to gain customers and to build a network. And the other thing is just to directly market yourself. This is something that we do as well. We do annual demo and marketing trips around Europe and Middle East, and we meet with people on the beach. We give them the boards so they can try them and test them. And this is another way to promote our product. So these are the two most successful sales channels that we use.
How does it work? So let's assume in a boat show, you're meeting surf instructor, right? And he's saying, okay, Alex, nice board. Let me bring it to Kiel. What is kind of the business behind it? So are you selling this board for him for like a wholesale price, so he or she can sell it like for the normal price when a e-foil student says, okay, I'd like to own it? Or is it more like a way where you just place your boards on your own expense and then get the boards back at the end of the season? Because even for a surf school, 10K is quite an investment, right? So it's not a high velocity kind of business, or they really need to figure out what they own and what they rent.
Well, you would be surprised how much money you can generate by renting e-foils and teaching people. And I can safely say that during high season, you pay back your board in the matter of 4 to 6 weeks. So most rental centers and surfing schools, they actually buy the boards themselves. And it's good investment that they pay back very quickly. And most of them, depending, of course, on the school and their preference, they have options to sell as well. And initially, this was one of our key strategies to first build the easiest boards on the market to learn on, so that all the water sports centers can use them for their renting and teaching business. And then once they bring the people into the sport, we can offer them something more performance oriented to the end consumer. And regarding your question about the network, how it works, it really depends on the country and the size of the market. Germany, for example, is one of the bigger markets in Europe. And here we have a distributor that has developed a network of dealers and schools. And obviously you found one of them in the region of Kiel or nearby. And in other smaller countries, we have direct dealerships with smaller partners. So it depends on the market.
Ah, okay. So like in Germany, you might not have a direct contact with the surf school in Kiel, but they are working with like the German distributor on it. Who then like having spare parts maybe in a central warehouse, helping with the service, and like the car industry, like where you have the retailer and the thing. Okay.
Pretty much the same scheme. He's handling all orders from us as manufacturers, and he has as well established a few service points around the country to meet the needs.
But how do you convince those schools? Because obviously there have been brands in the market that are around for a bit longer. I think Lift was a brand that kind of invented it 6-7 years ago, and I started like going through all the review processes. They are not anymore on the innovation side. They are expensive and not innovating anymore. Then you have this Australian brand, I believe it's Flight, which is a bit more expensive. They are starting with like 9K, going to like 16K. Yours is like starting at, I don't know, 2-7K or so. And then obviously we have a couple of like middle range brands. Takuma, I believe, was a brand which was also sold at Decathlon. Weidu obviously is also like still like a player in the market. Also, I don't know how they do their retail setup. You still have to convince a school that this 7K investment is the best investment and should not go to Takuma or like another brand or whatever, and maybe some of them have made a bad experience that their brand is already out of the market, so now they have a board which is worth nothing anymore. It's just like heavy electronic garbage. So how do you convince them? Because still you're like, it's a super young brand you're having, and people need to believe in you that next 4, 5, 6 years, which I think is a lifespan of such a board, I don't know, but maybe that's it, you're still around.
Well, the good thing is that all those people who have boards from brands that are no longer on the market, they are still convinced in the sport and in this business model that they have for renting out and giving lessons. So they are not scared to put their trust in another brand because they believe in this business. And the rest, how to convince them, that I guess that really depends on your brand and what your boards are designed for. We as a brand started with our biggest and easiest model. And in the first year, we were mainly targeting business owners of water sports centers and rental centers. So we optimized our boards, our wings, our software in the best way that it would allow a water sports center to do its business. And by going to trade shows, to boat shows, and by doing demonstration trips, we managed to show the commercial side of the water sports industry that our boards are great for business. So this is how we convinced the first.
And is this kind of the main ways to sell those boards? I believe that on boat shows, I don't know, a yacht manager, owner, I don't know who is buying the toys for a yacht. Maybe it's a yacht manager is buying it. But in this way, going through surfing schools, offering them kind of a good business model. Let's say you buy this board, 7K, and like after 10 weeks, you have like, maybe if you have 8K in revenue, and at the end of the season, you still can make from a used board 5K on top. So it's like, that's kind of the business case. And that's the way how you distribute boards. Is that then how we need to think about it?
That's part of the sales strategy. And it's an important part because you need to have places where people can try the board. for example, including yourself, you saw it at school in Kiel, you said. If you
I didn't see it. So my problem was, you cannot see it. You don't even know where to go. And when you start like e-foiling, you don't have any sense about the brands, because all brands are new. It's not like Robbie Nash, whatever brand. So
over a network of
like two or three friends, I found Surf Instructor, who had an old Weidu available for me like to rent. So it was, so especially because there are no known brands, makes it super hard like for the consumer to build trust. That's, I believed, where this kind of Audi corporation, I don't know what board maker they are doing it with, came in. But obviously their price tag starts at, I don't know, 15K, which is way beyond what people are willing to spend for the stuff. So, but that's the only like perceived brand in the market. So that's why I was asking, like, well, how do you decrease barriers of entry? How do you make it easy, accessible? Obviously the learning curve is not transparent. I agree. So for me, it also took like 1 hour or so, and then you can fly. Essentially, it took a couple of more hours to do some tricks on it. Looks more complicated, obviously, when you believe it's more complicated when you look at it on water. That's why I was asking if it makes sense to focus on two or three big surfing spots, Palma or Miami or, I don't know, somewhere like southern France, to really, really get through this market there and start from there. Now you're distributing all over Europe, which is still kind of expensive and like from a service infrastructure, not easy to do, I believe.
Well, we obviously have many strategies. We are trying to promote our products in famous surfing spots as well. Even though, I'll be honest with you, the surfing community is not exactly our target group, because they're looking for the wind and the waves.
In the comment section of the forums, that they're sometimes saying it's not a real sport. They are not 100% wrong. So it's more, it's closer to Skido stuff and than it's anything.
I would say it's less intense on the body. Doesn't require so much energy and strength from the rider, but it's still much more of a sport than riding a Sea-Doo jet ski, because you still do all the
balance
control and all the surfing with your body. And it also depends on your riding style. If you go for aggressive carving, you will get pretty tired after half an hour of tight turns. But yeah, we are exploring different directions to enter the market with the surfing industry, with the yacht industry, with sports and activities industries. For example, there are a lot of businesses in Europe that do SUP rentals and tours. And while these are much more affordable and low budget, they have the kind of active young people target group that would love this e-foiling activity. And they do a good job adding e-foils into their portfolio of activities. And yeah, we basically try to penetrate the markets from different directions. And it's a gradual process. It takes some time before the brand gets enough consumers and enough trust so that sales can increase. And in the first year, that's especially hard. I'm sure it's hard for all brands. Mm. But if you have a good product with a great performance and good support behind it, it's just a matter of time before people start trusting you. And yeah, orders are increasing quickly.
Nice, nice, super interesting. So what you're working on then for 2025 season? So what's the next steps? When I go to your website, I see that some of the boards are sold out.
Well,
maybe I'm not reading it right, but some are all colors are sold out. It's kind of a batch you see on some boards.
It's actually what you're seeing is our first generation of boards that's discontinued from production, and we've already released our second big generation of carbon composite boards called the Stellar Series. These are already out. They've been on the market for almost a year now, and people love them. We are working on some more exciting professional models that are going to be announced pretty soon this month, and as well on much more revolutionary products that I don't want to really share much from. But yeah, we have already very good range of products that covers everyone from a complete beginner to basically the professional. And now we are starting to iterate and improve each component to be even better. And we're working as well on some new stuff that would really change the e-foiling experience of all people. And this will come out at some point next year.
Okay, got it. Then one last question. When I look at your range, and obviously you said you have this kind of carbon board, which is a top-notch range, and you have a board called SciFly Rider, which has kind of an EPP foam, if I look at it correctly. Yeah. And looking at the aim of like bringing this board to the mass market, so I would say, okay, everything which is kind of carbon, super hard, whatever, fancy, very expensive, and for the bigger, lazier people that want to try it like 2 or 3 hours, this EPP direction seems to be more feasible. So how far away are we from simple? So you can do like EPP foam or like this SUP kind of stuff where you can inflate part of the board, which makes it easier for accidents. They are hard to destroy, right? So, but for 99% of the market, that's most likely enough. And they don't need 150-minute riding time. They're good with like 50 minutes. They're good with 30 kilometers an hour. So, and on all the different websites, and as you just said, you're seeing this direction getting into more high performance, more carbon, more like more sports thing. But most of the people that want to try it, they are good with like the beginners to advanced kind of board, which should be like the focus of the industry. Am I wrong here? I'm just wondering why not more people are focusing on easy, standardized stuff with less performance for lower price.
You're absolutely right. And this is actually our approach into the industry. When we started in 2019, there were two brands on the market, both of them competing on which one has the smaller and the faster board and which one is more aggressive.
And that were Lift and Flight?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And actually, 90% of the market is people that just want to enter our sport and enjoy it without really
shared with friends,
so much effort. Yeah,
shared with the family.
Just cruise around and get this sensation from flying without engaging into super aggressive carving turns, etc., riding really small boards. So with this being our strategy, we started with bigger and easier boards, and we've started experimenting with more affordable technologies that are safer, for example, because they're softer and less fragile, and they're more accessible in terms of price. They're more practical, as you mentioned, with the inflatable boards technology. And of course, we develop the high performance as well, because every direction has advantages and disadvantages. With the inflatables and EPP foam boards, you sacrifice a bit of performance in terms of the weight of the board and the rigidity, which are aspects of a high performance board that are really important. So we try to have a diverse range of products of boards and wings, and we can find the best setup for every customers. But as you correctly assumed, most people, they don't want the highest performance and the most expensive. They want an easy and affordable way into the sport, and this is what the foam board technology and the inflatable board technology is great for.
Okay, got it. So you're saying there's going to be like this EPP generation, you're not leaving it. There's going to be like new boards coming out for a more affordable price. Plus on top, you're looking at the performance side. I guess this is a board you're like personally interested in, right? It's like you're looking more on the performance side.
That's my baby.
Yeah, I totally get it. But I'd wish for a board with like a good service infrastructure, which is below 4,000 euros. You don't need like huge riding time. It's like, and you know, like a wing for kite surfing or a new big kite sometimes costs like $2,000-$3,000 if you go like for a new generation kite. So it's like, it's not so far away from other like surfing sports, but still we need to drop definitely below 5K for not making it kind of an investment case, because there is no rationale for e-foiling, right? It's like, it's a toy.
So it's a fun toy.
There is no use. You cannot go faster to work in the morning because you can curse the water. So it needs to come down. That's why I was wondering why the whole industry is focusing on like new carbon levels, smaller stuff, lighter batteries, because everything is there. Like, and it was there like 2022. And like the good boards from 2022 for half the price would open up a much bigger market. That's my perception, obviously. It's like, it's easy to say from the sidelines.
Oh, well, you're right. We've started the conversation with the same idea that e-foils are still a bit too expensive to be widely adopted. So I think all of us manufacturers are working on bringing the costs down so that we can decrease the entry-level price. And I believe this is what will propel the sport to new heights. And you're right. Most people don't need the highest performance. They need something stable that works and gives them the fun of flying above the water, and that's enough.
So, and you're saying if somebody...
You're working in that direction.
If somebody is buying like a Seafly used board, then it might be a good strategy to buy it from somebody who was using it only on sweetwater seas, right? So don't go to somebody like at the Mediterranean Sea or like Dubai or so, because it's salty water. Like a water from a seawater sea is more forgiving and has less drag on electronic and all the other stuff.
Well, you've mentioned basically the most abrasive and difficult place in the world for technology, Dubai, with super high temperatures, high UV index, and a lot of salt in the water. But if you take good care of your boards, if you rinse them with fresh water after each ride and you do the regular servicing, you should be fine with your board for a long time. Of course, if you don't take good care of it, you can destroy it fairly quickly. But if I would not hesitate from buying a board from a sea with salty water if it has been maintained properly.
Okay. Good to know. So I will definitely follow your brand. We'll do like a test ride at the Kiel e-surfing in a station for sure. Now I understand like the categories. So I always was wondering, so what are the different like board names are for? And you're saying like Stellar is like the more recent generation and some older generations are sold out. But it's, it was definitely very entertaining for me, and it has a good learning curve. And I will now look up what people are writing in the forums about your board. You're active there, which is really cool. You have by far the most advanced website in the whole industry. So it definitely builds trust.
Thank you.
And wish you the very best for 2025.